Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Girl, loved the mass. I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed and I confessed. I really felt that I was blessed. Plus, I loved my uniform. So did the boy who lived next door. But something changed when I became of age. Those things I thought were true. Someday I'd break the big taboo. Letting go, oh God.
Letting go. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour, WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, live right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today is September the 26th, just less than a month, 3 months to Christmas. So start that shopping list. As if I would, I don't generally. We have Wombat on the phones. Can you say hello, Wombat?
Hey, it's the Wombat. Hey. Welcome, everybody.
Welcome, Wombat. And we'll get into you and your guest here in just a minute. I just need to introduce the show a little bit more, and then we'll go on. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a call-in talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we also talk about religion, religious faiths, God's holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only believer, I'll get it right in a minute. I'm tongue-tied for some reason today. If you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in Knoxville, well, you're just not. There are other atheists and free-thinking and rationalist groups that exist right here in Knoxville, and they have a buku of members. And I can tell you how you'll connect with them right after the mid-show break. Also, did you know that we have an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville and have been for over 8 years now? Did you know that, Wombat?
I do, and I've been telling my coworkers to watch it. It's really cool. Just so the audience knows, it's basically the sequel to Avatar The Last Airbender, but it's on Netflix, and it's first season's out. It's really, really good. I think the cartoon is a little animated. It's animated a little weird, but there's a deaf character, and she's so good. Her name is General Amaya, and she's like one of the best characters.
I don't think you've got the right channel on. I don't believe that you know anything about this atheist call-in television show, even though you say
it's a Dragon Prince. It's a Dragon Prince, right?
No. It's called Free Thought Forum. It's actually going on right now. If you have a TV and a remote control in your hand, just switch over temporarily, of course, to Comcast Channel 12, and you'll see Free Thought Forum, an atheist call-in television show broadcasting here in Knoxville. It's available on Comcast Channel 12 and Charter Channel 192. Or you can watch it streaming online at ctvknox.org. That's CTV as in community TV, knox.org. You can also find some of their archives of their shows on YouTube, where Fan has been posting them. Just go to YouTube and search for three words, Free Thought Forum Knoxville. It goes from 6:30 to 7:30 every Wednesday, so we kind of conflict. But you can DVD or DVR their show and listen to us live. And let's see, that's about it for the announcements. You have a guest with you today, Wombat. You care to interview?
Oh yeah, We're about to drop the craziest radio DJ name we've ever had on the show. I hope you're ready for it.
I'm ready.
Chris, who are you?
I am Shoe Pebbler.
Very cool, Shoe Pebbler. And I know about that, and I feel like I'm going to get some heads up on why that's such a cool name. But first, I just want to let you guys know this is my friend Chris. He's part of the Street Epistemology group that I think you're situated out of Indiana, aren't you?
Correct.
Right. And he's been in
out of New Palestine, Indiana, just east of Indianapolis.
Okay, Indiana. Sounds good.
Yeah. And I think it's really cool in that he's been super helpful. He's done some videos on his own. He gives a lot of what I feel is probably the most helpful thing is critical feedback on people's stuff. And I think the way that we will get better at being able to communicate with other people using straight epistemology, which I'll let Chris explain what it is, but the way we'll get better at it is by listening to honest feedback from people in and out of the group. And Chris has always been helpful with regard to, like, giving his honest opinions on where people can improve on. So, Sue Pebbler, I'll let you, what is street epistemology, and then I guess how'd you fall into it?
Oh boy, I fell into it when I was about 3 years into my atheist experience, if you will. Was in the Catholic Church for 50 years for a multitude of reasons. Figured out that I'm a free thinker and wanted to delve into something that I believed in. And I never really truly believed in Catholicism. I just kind of lived the motions. And then I stumbled into some Anthony Magna Basco stuff. I stumbled into your stuff, Ty, and I was hooked.
And what's not to like? Wombat, you have a great channel.
Exactly.
Thanks. I appreciate that. But Chris, you said you fell out of this from your original religious faith. What actually brought you to street epistemology? And I guess maybe we should back up a little bit. Like, when you said you were Catholic, can you talk about the falling out experience that you have? Because I think that's always very interesting.
Yep, absolutely. I call myself a cradle Catholic. I don't know if you've heard that term, but it in essence means I was born into a Catholic family. As Christopher Hitchens says, you're not born Catholic, you're raised a Catholic, or you're raised in the faith. And that's what happened to me. I'm the youngest of eight children, a typical Catholic family, perpetuating the stereotype very clearly. And what happened was I started living my life. I started my own business, and I found out pretty quick when things turned south who my friends were, and it wasn't the people that were in the church that I thought would support me. And then kind of shortly before that, actually, my son was born. He had a severe case of hypospadias. He was born early. And I just, you know, he went through multiple surgeries, and I don't know if you know what hypospadias is. Basically, a child is caught somewhere in between a male and a female. And I'm having conversations with people at church about this, and they're telling me that, you know, people that are gay or sinful, they're going to hell. There's somebody in our church that told me if I voted for Obama, I was going to hell. And it just everything hit me all at once. I was like, I've had enough, you know?
That sounds incredible. I can't imagine the kind of feedback that you got back from the people at your church. Would you mind telling me about, like, what were the things that they were saying in order to, like, alleviate your concerns?
No one alleviated my concerns because I really didn't make it known to anybody there. I had it out really bad in an email. I was in that angry atheist phase, which I'm sure maybe you're aware of, maybe you're not. I don't know if you went through that.
No. Oh, I definitely
Larry,
did.
I don't know if you went through that.
Oh,
did. Yeah,
oh,
I definitely did.
When this woman sent out an email and told me I was going to hell, depending upon who I voted for, I just said, I unloaded on her. I'm like, who are you to tell me this, you know? Mm-hmm. I can vote for whoever the hell I want to vote for. Oh, I said hell. Can I say that on the radio?
Yeah, yeah. On this channel. Yes. On this one, it's probably the perfect place to talk about it.
Well, yeah, really.
All right.
We are still an FCC
you can edit
regulated
that out, right?
Radio station. So you have to watch other curse words, but hell's fine.
Right. Hell's fine. Hell's absolutely apropos on this show. Mm-hmm. So, right. So when you came through this, like, you know, this personal crisis, people weren't helping you out. What was keeping you from just, I don't know, opening up yourself to the Holy Spirit and allowing God to actually touch you and be perfectly saved through His grace?
Oh, wow. You said that like you mean it. I would say that I was a fairly avid prayer. I mean, when I was in the Catholic Church, I was part of CHIRP. Which are you familiar with CHIRP?
I've never heard of CHIRP before. Would you mind explaining that to me?
It's Christ Renews His Parish. And it basically means a bunch of guys get together and they plan for, I don't know, 24 weeks or something, and they put on a weekend and they get testimony. And basically it's just a reason for guys to get together and get out of the house and make new friends, right? Which is good, you know? And that worked out great. And then I was on a CHIRP team, and then we put on weekends for other guys. And I would say from the outside, everybody thought I was pretty darn religious.
Yeah.
And if you surround yourself with religion and people who are religious, then, hey, maybe you do feel like you're religious. But when you go through tough times, and, you know, part of it was, you know, my wife's family, my family, there's just a lot of judgment going on during times when I started my company. And I was like, you know what? I don't think I need to be judged, and I don't think you're in a position to judge me.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
So you didn't even want judging from, like, an all-powerful father figure. You just wanted to, like, avoid that situation altogether.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah, I just stopped going. I stopped going to church. I told my wife, we've been married about 31 years as of recently here.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I told her that, you know, I just can't go to church anymore. I can't stand there and say the profession of faith in good faith. I just can't do it, you know. And I think I may have told you this prior. Another big part of my departure from the Catholic Church was when my oldest son confronted me, saying that, you know, Dad, I don't really want to be confirmed. I don't believe it. And at the time, I didn't know what it was called. But, you know, I was, what is the thing where you say, you know, it's better to go ahead and do it. And that, on the chance that you might die and go to hell. What's that called?
Pascal's wager.
Pascal's wager. Thank you. I couldn't think of it. But at the time, that's what I was telling him. I didn't know what it was. And then he subsequently did it. And he's told me now that he's older that he regrets the fact that he did it. And that we semi-forced him to do it. And that hit me pretty hard, you know, because I was like, you know what, I've always thought I was a pretty good free thinker on my own. I didn't mean to pressure him. But when I think back on it, I said, look, just do it so that we can keep the peace in the house. And that was the wrong thing to do. So I've learned a lot. And to my son's credit, he's a, you know, devout atheist, tries not to talk about it a lot because he doesn't
really
have ruffled feathers.
Wow.
My daughter, she married a guy from India who was raised Hindu, but neither of them are faithful. I think they're spiritual in their own way, but they're not allegiant to any church or any religion.
Yeah.
I believe they're either agnostic or atheist. And my other son, who's 23, is also an atheist. So other than my son, who's autistic, who's 18. Yeah. So other than my son, who's autistic, who's 18, everybody in my family, other than my wife and my son, who's autistic, are atheists at this point.
Were you the last one in your family to convert, or did you set that trend going? Like, who would you say is the first to actually be outspoken about it?
My oldest son, who's the electrical engineer, very regimented in his thinking, very studious.
What was your, you may have alluded to this story before, but what was your reaction when you, like, understood that he didn't believe in God? Like, did you know what atheism meant at the time, or were you kind of like, well, don't do that. Just play along until you die. I mean, that's not too much to ask for. Like, was there any sort of pleading on your part in order to, like, come to terms with what that meant? And did you do any personal research on what atheism meant as you started your own transition?
Well, as I started my transition, but I really didn't start that transition until after I had some conversation with him.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure, to be honest, that he really expressed it in a way that I could have understood it. It was later in listening to Hitchens and Dawkins and, you know, the people that are involved in the SE community that it really rounded out in my mind that it's just a lack of belief is what an atheist is. And that, to me, really set the tone for, like, okay, shit, it's easy for me to say that I'm an atheist now because I just lack that belief. And really anything supernatural.
Yeah.
I've shed it, and I feel it's amazing.
You can't talk yourself into believing anyway. It's not like you can choose your beliefs. You're either convinced of it or you're not. Well, it sounds like to me like for most of your life you were convinced, but once somebody who had made the journey started talking to you about it, it made you question the convictions that you had about that. And once you started questioning, well, the rest is history.
Very true. Once you start questioning, the rest is history, or the rest literally becomes maybe even like pseudo-history.
Yeah.
And I think that's a great way to segue into what we mean by SD. So this is a really compelling story for how you left your faith. Could you mind talking about, like, how you first discovered SE? Like, did you start with the book by Peter Boghossian, or did you start watching videos, or did you just start asking questions yourself to people and try to figure out your own?
Before you go too much farther, could you explain what SE is real shortly?
How about Street Peddler?
Huh? Yeah.
Street Peddler, how do you do that?
That sounds good.
Yeah, street epistemology is a conversational tool that kind of helps people reflect on the reliability of the methods they use who arrived at their deeply held beliefs. And it was actually, I don't know if it was, it's more than anything, it's a use of the Socratic method, uh-huh. you know, Socrates. But there was a book that was written by, why am I struggling with names today? Peter Boghossian, right? Is that the correct pronunciation?
Yeah, that's fine. That's good enough.
Close enough. He wrote a book, and it's actually available online to download. I think you can get it for free, or you can buy it through Amazon and several places. But it's a guide to creating atheists, I think is the name of the book, or something like that.
Yeah,
and it's all about a manual for creating atheists. Thank you. So the whole premise is having just reasonable conversations with people and just finding out some things that they have deep-seated belief in and saying, you know, why do you have those beliefs? What makes you think that that's correct, right? That particular belief. And then, you know, drilling down, I like to say it's probably not a good term, but exposing not the fallacies of it. I think it's hugely important, and Ty and I've talked about this, to go into any SE conversation with a complete open mind, unbiased, and take it where the facts go. It's all about exposing the facts and their logic. Hey, if they know that there's a God and they can give me proof that there's a God, I want to know it. If they want to tell me that the Cubs are better than the Reds, great. Give me proof that proves that. You know what? And I'll seriously think about it and seriously consider believing it. But until such time, I'm neutral.
How old or of a process do you think street epistemology is? Like, how long have people been asking each other questions about what they believe to be true?
Oh, I think not necessarily under the auspices of street epistemology, but I think people for as long as there's been people have been asking mm-hmm. Socratic-type questions. It's from my perspective, I didn't know it really existed. It's not just a tool that is good for confronting people on their religious beliefs. But, and I think, Ty, you've proven this over and over again. It's a great way to identify fallacies in other people's beliefs about anything, really. You know, I've watched Anthony Magnabosco talk about, you know, there was a guy he interviewed in one of his, and typically it's like 5 to 10 minutes or something. I know, Ty, yours have gone a little longer than mine. But when the guy was like, you know, I just have this belief that if I see a penny laying on the ground, then I'm going to have a bad day. And it's like, seriously? Why would you have that belief? But at some time in his past, he saw a penny and he had a terrible day and he linked the two. And in his mind, he had that superstition. And we kind of, I heard Anthony just kind of blowing that up or, you know, saying, hey, why do you feel that way? Give me some specifics of why you feel that way. What would make you not feel that way? And you could see the wheel spinning in the guy's head. He's like, wow, this is really a crazy belief that I carried. You know?
I think street epistemology is not only just good for, like, really any topic, but it's also, like, something that could be used by anyone, regardless of what their initial faith or lack of faith is. I think it's a good tool for Christians, good tool for Gnostic atheists, good tool for agnostic atheists, and, like, you know, everything else that's out there. It's not a method that's biased towards any single person or any kind of ideology or group. And while there is a religious front trying to lambast street epistemology as a technique to have with other people or to communicate with other people, I think once people understand what it is basically just a thing that people have been doing since the dawn of time. You know, asking how'd you figure that out is not a very complicated thing. And it's just a really fun way to have a conversation without letting it devolve into an argument or debate. I've seen your chats, Chris. I think, especially with the one with the passion that you had of, like, a marijuana leadership group. Like, she seems to throw out a lot of different beliefs that would make some people's heads spin. But what street epistemology just does, or the way that you've used it, was just a way to have a very cordial and respectful conversation platform with someone in a way that lets them maybe realize that maybe they don't have the best foundation for their beliefs. And that allows them to either find a better foundation, which is good, or abandon the conclusion altogether for the search of more true conclusions, which is also a good thing.
Agreed.
So I want to ask.
It was the Church of Cannabis, is who I. Talk to the lady who's kind of in charge.
That's great. I'm wondering, here's this cool thing. So street epistemology, as we're calling it right now, like I said, it's not a new thing, but it's relatively gained, it's gained a lot more attention because of the efforts that everyone's putting in and recording their talks and like pushing that on the internet and showing that a really cool technique for atheists, not Christians, or for Christians, not anyone else, can work if you do it with an open mind. And terms are coming out all the time. I think Chris is really cool in that he came up with like this really, really awesome term that I thought was like, oh my gosh, I need to start telling people about this and start using my videos too. But do you want to talk about that? It's actually based on the name that you have, shoe pebbling. I think it'd be really cool. How about that?
Yep, absolutely. After watching many, many videos online, largely Anthony, because I've watched every one of his, just to try to master the technique, and I'm far from it. I'm still a noob. But watching you, Ty, and also watching Anthony and many of others that are doing this, that something that has been said is we want to leave a pebble in somebody's shoe. Not literally, but figuratively in their mind. Something that gnaws at them a little bit and makes them like, wow, you know, that's something that's bothering me. I need to think about that. So it's kind of like planting a pebble in the shoe, where that's what I'm doing when I have these conversations. Sometimes they leave a pebble in my shoe. Sometimes I leave one in theirs. And I'm okay. Either way.
Two ways.
Yeah. Yep.
So tell us about the last one that you've had, or the last good one that you've had. Can you go into a little detail on what happened?
Go
ahead.
Oh, we got 7 minutes into the show, but this is going to definitely be a multi-parter conversation. Just put that out there. All right, go for it.
So I don't know why, but because of Mike Pence and some of the things that he tried to do as governor, with the Religious Freedom Act or whatever that was, that is why this guy who was a self-promoter and, you know, he did some other promoting, he just decided that he was going to start this Church of Cannabis. And their sacrament was going to be smoking weed, basically. And it turns out that there's probably more documentation about the healing power of cannabis than there is prayer or anything else. I think there may actually be some truth to the healing power of cannabis. So what they did is they sued the state to be recognized as a fully fledged church in the state of Indiana. And they fought them like crazy, but ultimately, and that's why when I wasn't hearing about it in the news anymore, I'm like, I got to get a hold of Bill Levin, the guy who started this. And he pushed me off to one of his underlings, but she really runs the church for him. And so we sat down and talked. And what I've come to find out, you know, I kind of was under the auspice of sitting down, just learning more about how did this come about, what's happened to the lawsuit. And I found out that they're fully endorsed by the state of Indiana as a church. The only thing they will not allow them to do is celebrate their sacraments during church. So she was very careful during the conversation to tell me that, you know, in the last 5 years, if I smoked marijuana, then I could be arrested. So anything you ask me, it has to be about anything I did more than 5 years ago, which I think was a farce, but I understand that.
So how did you actually get into touch with them? And when did it strike you that these are like a really great people? This is a great group for me to start recording my SE videos with. And was this really your first one? Or like, was this,
yeah,
your
what?
First? How do you even set that up? Like, how do you, like, hey, I'm just this guy. I want to bring in a camera and talk to you. How do you do that? How does that work?
Yeah, well, as you know, it just takes a little cojones to place the call. In my case, it was reaching out through their Facebooks, getting Bill's email. Not hard to find people's email anymore. Send him an email, introduced myself, told him that I'm just fascinated by what he's done, want to learn more. I'm very curious of the status of the lawsuit, want to better understand their beliefs. And that's all it took. They were more than happy to talk about it.
So just setting the stage for as a visual, when I first got a message from Shoe Pebbler saying that, hey, I've done my first talk. And I was like, okay, cool. I'm wondering what kind of like setup he has, because everyone has a little bit of a different setup. There are some people who just like have a GoPro on their chest and they stand out in the middle of the street and they talk to people. Some people set up a table and they'll have some stuff there. There's a really cool lady who we'll definitely have on the show in the future named Linda Mako. She has like a fully catered table with coffee and tea in the middle of the woods. And, I didn't know what to expect, but, when you showed me your video, I was like, oh my gosh, like aside from it, all you need is like a studio camera. And this is like a straight up studio set. It's like the set for Ellen or like Between Two Ferns. Like there's a backdrop. There's two chairs sitting. You got water bottles set up. It seems like you guys look as if you're a mic. You guys have your suits on. It was really great. So it's like a much more, what'd you say? Like a formal production setting. Yet when it started, it was just much more of the casual conversation between two people, almost like on a late night talk show. Was that kind of the mindset they had going into it? And I guess what did you think about as far as like figuring out what you needed to do to record your essay?
Yeah, good question, Sty. I have a small little I would call it my No Pro. It's a knockoff, but it does halfway decent, but I know the audio is horrible on it because I've used it for other stuff. So I was like, okay, I can capture the video, but I don't know how it does in low light. I've used my webcam. I bought a really nice Logitech webcam that does really nice, says 1080p, hooked it up to my Linux laptop and tested it with, you know, Hangouts. I tested it with YouTube Live, and I thought, you know what, I could do that. So I just brought my laptop, hooked up the webcam, put it on a tripod, and when I got there, they have kind of like hallway lights hanging on the ceiling of this chair. It was as dark as you could imagine. I couldn't believe it. And then they're like, well, we've got stage lights, so we'll turn those on. But the stage lights were, it was a combination of red, green, and blue to give us a white. And
wow.
You gave me a lot of credit for the quality of the video, but it was really not that great. But I've been editing videos all my life, so I was able to edit it up pretty nice. But the overall quality of the audio and the video was not as good as I had hoped. And candidly, that was the first and only major sit down that I've done. Now, am I practicing SE with family and friends and everything else in a very gentle way? Absolutely. I've been doing quite a bit of that.
And Chris is always a little bit harder than himself, but it was really, really nice. I hope you posted that. Is that posted on YouTube? Can people really see that?
I've not, but I can post it. I don't mind posting it.
Okay, you definitely got to post it. And while you get in that posting mindset, we're at the bottom of the half hour.
We are.
Larry, what do you think?
I was going to have to jump in, but no, I appreciate it. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. We're on WOZO Radio, 103.9 LPFM. Usually at this time, give our voices a break. I play a song, and we have a little commercial, basically, or a public announcement. But keep this number handy. Write it down, 865-333-5937. 865-333-5937. I'm going to play a short song, and we'll take a break and be right back. See you then.
Nice.
I come to the garden alone. There's a strange looking guy by the tree. He's talking to someone, but nobody's there. This creeps me out, so I flee. I pick up some Cheetos and a Mexican beer and head home where my books wait for me. I get crumbs in the bed and annoy my companion. That Sunday in reality, Sunday in reality, Sunday in reality. No prophets, no preachers, no cross-legged teachers, just Dawkins, Sam Harris, and me. Most of my friends really seem to exist. I don't think they're imaginary. There's one on the couch since his wife threw him out. And that's Sunday in reality. On a hill far away stood an old rugged cross. So I called up the ACLU. There was screaming and hate mail and death threats and such. It was clearly the right thing to do. If the faithful had faith, would they jam all those crosses into hilltops to force you to see? No, they'd softly and tenderly call you to join them that Sunday in reality. Sunday in reality. Sunday in reality. No prophets, no preachers, no cross-legged teachers, just Dawkins, Sam Harris, and me. I have guilt, I have shame, but it's all in my name. No one dies for my sins except me. And I'm not off the hook for a few Hail Marys and that Sunday in reality. Sunday in reality. Sunday in reality. No prophets, no preachers, no cross-legged teachers, just Dawkins, Sam Harris, and me. I get this weird feeling I'm not being watched. I get this weird feeling I'm free. Come up to the house and we'll jam after dinner that Sunday in reality. Sunday in reality.
You're listening to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on Wozo 103.9 LPFM in Knoxville, Tennessee. Feel free to join in on the conversation at 865-333-5937. That's 865-333-5937. And now, back to the show. Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply the best.
Are you at home?
Yes.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Doubter 5. This is Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. Remember the number if you want to call in Knoxville is 333-5937. Phone lines are open. This is WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM. We are live on Wednesday, September 26th at 7:30 now. So if it's not the date and time that you're listening to it, it's probably a rebroadcast or a podcast. But anyway, I did want to mention that we have several atheists and free-thinking groups here in Knoxville. I can take a few minutes to tell you all about them, but we have a guest on the line, so I'll just give you a link to go to. Just do a Google search for Knoxville Atheists or go to KnoxvilleAtheist.org, and you'll be able to find the links for all the different atheist groups here in Knoxville, free-thinking groups, churches. We have a no-God church that you might be interested in. But go to KnoxvilleAtheist.org and check it out. And back to you, Wombat.
Okay, cool. Again, we're talking with my friend Shoepebbler. Shoepebbler, he is a fellow from a street epistemology Facebook group where we invite people to have really polite and cordial conversations with people about what they believe to be true. We think it's a really great way to have people consider their beliefs in terms of the method that they use to reach their conclusions, and challenging the method that they use rather than themselves or the conclusion. And by challenging that method, that bridge that connects the person and the conclusion, you're able to, like, have a more honest assessment with less ego involved, and you can actually critically assess if that method that they use was reliable or not. And if it turns out that it's not reliable, the person that you're talking to has a very, very strong belief, maybe even, like, absolute confidence, will be very much more receptive to questioning whether or not that conclusion is worth holding if they can't find a reliable path to get there. And Shoepebbler is really cool. He just pushed out a really, really great video. He's hitting the scene. He's coming up with really great terms. And what we're doing is we're just having the show and having a really nice chat. I have a really interesting angle that I'd like to take for the second half. There's a lot of criticisms with regard to street epistemology as a method. And I want to see, like, how you would handle, like, those critiques and, like, maybe what kind of things you could offer on your side. So, like, for example, there's definitely a Christian front that says that street epistemology is a technique to brainwash people.
Wake them up.
Have you heard that criticism, and what do you think about that? And why would you respond to that? If you think it's true, that's only fine, too.
I do not think it's true. I think there's a label that's been assigned to street epistemology. It may be partially earned. I mean, the book was, a guidebook for creating atheists by Peter Boghossian. So right out of the gate, he's letting it be known that, hey, the goal of SE is to create atheists. I can understand why Christians would be challenged by that, right? But I think the way you and Anthony and a lot of the folks in the SE community approach SE, it's less about trying to convert people away from Christianity or deconvert them to atheism. It's more about, let's examine your beliefs. A lot of times if you surround yourself with people that believe everything you believe, you have confirmation bias. I believe that exists. It exists in a lot of things in our community, not just religion. And my goal when I sit down to talk to folks is, let's expose that. Let's examine that, if you will. Where did you get your core beliefs? How did that come about?
Right.
Let's drill down to that just a little bit. And if you come at it from a neutral position, I think people take less offense to it.
Yeah. And the thing about it, we were talking along about the Socratic method. The Socratic method, of course, is named after Socrates, who really held conversations in a conversational way by just asking questions. And if you've got someone who doesn't want you to think about things, doesn't want you to question anything, don't want you to even entertain questions, then they're not your friend. If your preacher or your friend or your wife or somebody says, you really shouldn't think about that, or you really shouldn't question that, then that's a problem, and you've got to take an issue with that person. They just don't have your best interest in heart.
They aren't doing you any favors in terms of like challenging healthy mental growth. They could be a bad friend, but they could still be your friend, I think.
Yeah.
I would say, I've heard of books that say, I've heard people claim that street epistemology is biased because it's basically a manual for creating atheists. But for me, the best manual for creating atheists has always been the Bible.
Right.
I think more people have turned away from God from just reading that one book in a critical mindset than any other book in the history of mankind. Because of that, I think we should at least be receptive to, while it's very a provocatively titled book, inside it, once you open it up, everything's pretty much congenial as far as like, hey, here's good ways to talk to people. And what we would love is for a better method to talk to people about their faith, or a demonstration by other people who do have faith that this method could also work in a way to confirm the faith that they have. So it's not something that we should just fear and cross out. I think we should just be more receptive to it as being like a very useful technique. The best thing that we can do right now is demonstrate that it works by continuing to have these conversations with people. And if we're able to document them and put them on places and platforms where people can also appreciate them, I think there's definitely something good in that.
One point I like to make, the truth fears nothing from investigation. If what you believe
there
is
you
in fact true, then investigation will bear that out. If it's not true, wouldn't
you
want to know?
And what else I hate too is when people say things like, "Oh, well, that's a hypothetical. I don't need to answer that," or "That makes me want to think about my God in a bad way. So therefore, it's not true." I feel like the questions that we ask in street epistemology are just great ways to get around these defensive mechanisms that people put up to avoid critical thinking. And if anything, we're an advocate for critical thought more than atheism, definitely more than any kind of creed or belief. We are believers that critical thinking is important and not enough people do it on the things that they deeply hold to be true. How about this? Shoe Peddler, got a question for you. I've noted that a lot of SE is done in a way that makes it seem like you guys are picking religious people. I'm talking it from the vein of like a Christian person. It's like, you guys go out there with your game plan and you just drop your, rhetoric on unsuspecting Christians. Isn't that kind of rude? Isn't that like sort of like clearly, like, not cool. Like, you start the conversation, hey, I want to talk about whatever you want to talk about. But then by the end, you're, like, making them realize that their faith isn't right. Like, how do you reconcile that as a good thing? Like, doesn't that seem a little subversive?
I don't think so at all. If you watch any of the videos that are done by Anthony or this wonderful guy named Ty,
hey,
any of them, I would say the large, yes, it is, one back. The largest percentage of the ones I watch, they're open to interviewing, if you will, or talking to folks about any belief that they have that they believe is true. You know, faith, you can have faith in anything. I can have faith that if I fall backwards, somebody's going to catch me. Is that founded on reason? You know, those are the kind of things I want to talk about. I want to talk to people about anything they have faith and believe in. Doesn't have to be a religion. It could be anything. And to the point you made, Ty, there are people that we interview who are Muslim. There are people that are Jewish. There are people that are already atheists. Every religion is being interviewed. Every person that has a belief in something, external religion, we're more than happy to talk to them about that subject matter as well.
Mm. I think that's a great point. It's just that openness and the willingness to demonstrate that it works on other things other than faith that is really useful to me. I recently did a talk with a guy who thought that, let me see if I get the names right, Tim Cook was a worse CEO than Steve Jobs. And we talked about that for maybe we talked about that for a good 15 minutes. And what was cool was this is just an absolute opinion that was important to the person that I was talking to, but isn't necessarily relevant on like a religious front. So I would say that there are some people who take Apple products as their own subsequent religion.
Agreed.
But this guy just had like this really strong opinion that this CEO isn't better than the other one. I'm like, can Etsy work in an environment like this as well? Turns out it totally can. And so what I did was I held a talk and I tried to get components in the video of like, this is what I'm thinking of as my mental process as I'm talking to this person. So I would say that there is definitely a game plan with regard to conducting an Etsy conversation, but it's never, I'm going to make you say these lines next, and I have a flow chart of what I'm going to anticipate what you're going to say and then fill it up
which is kind of funny because when you run across a lot of religious apologetics, they have exactly
They
have a script, and if you deviate from the script, they get you right back on it as fast as they can.
Oh, my gosh, yes, absolutely. Oh, my gosh, the script there is so real. But in SC, it's more of just like, it's kind of like a rap battle.
Yeah.
It's free flow. Exactly, that. So, like, I'm working with whatever the person gives me, and if that guy wants to talk about Steve Jobs and Tim Cook, I'm there to talk about Steve Jobs and Tim Cook. Even if I don't really have a base for it, I can ask questions and learn about it, and I don't need to start from one topic and force my way down to religion. Like, I can literally stick with that topic and work together with the person that I'm talking to and come up with, like, a very objective criteria to compare these two CEOs and see if he has a reasonable rationale to compare these guys with. I think Schumacher had a really good example in his videos, too. He was talking to the pastor of a commune for cannabis about the benefits, or like, I think she was going through like some supernatural stuff, like everyone was connected, there's energy there. And each thing she brought up, like each new topic she brought up, she probably wasn't trying to like, well, I don't want to talk about that right now. Let's just go back to the God belief. Instead, he was like, oh, energy? You mind if we talk about energy? Oh, spirituality? What do you mean by spirituality? Oh, you think there's like a connectedness for everyone? Hey, let's talk about that for a little bit. And every single thing she brings to the table, he works with it. And I think if we're more honest to do that, it's a better demonstration that Etsy's about what you're given rather than forcing a script onto somebody.
Right. Yeah, I agree.
I was going to point out, Ty, one of the things that Peter Boghossian said in one of his talks was that faith is an unreliable process which will rarely point one in the direction of truth.
Mm.
And that rings so true to me. I think about the things that I had faith in. As soon as you have faith, you stop digging. You stop looking. I mean, you're in science, right, Ty? Maybe that's a little cat out of the bag for you. But let's just say that we said polio was brought on by God for sin. And we just stopped there. And we had faith that, hey, you know, God's going to take care of this one way or another. We never would have found a cure for polio.
Right.
Faith does not lead us in the direction of truth. And whether that's about religion, whether it's about anything else, that's where I want to go.
Mm.
I want to find out why you believe.
And if we can highlight whether or not that message is reliable, at least to get them thinking. Because to be perfectly honest with you, I don't think anyone can convince another person on their own religion or their own deeply held beliefs. But you can get them to question it themselves. And sometimes they just need a little momentum to get started.
Yeah.
And my goal of Etsy is never to go out and try to change someone's mind. It's to ask questions that help them change their own mind if that's something they want to do. And the best thing I can encourage them to do is think. And critical thought, I think, is just really important. I don't think there's anything wrong with asking questions. Hey, Chupetler, I got another question for you. On the board of Critique SE from the Facebook group, it seems like Street of Islam, I'm talking to one of the Christian posters on this thread, but it seems like Street of Islamology is just a tool for the new evangelical atheists that are out there. It's a new atheist tool that is used like a Jedi mind trick on unsuspecting Christians. What's really strange, though, is that they don't realize that they call them that a Street of Islamology is in itself a religion unto itself. That's what the word epistemology means. What do you think about that?
I don't believe epistemology. Epistemology, if you look at the definition of epistemology, it's the study of knowledge.
Mm.
So it's not a religion, right?
Right.
So,
but it sounds like Scientology. It sounds like Scientology. Therefore, it's a cult, right? That's how English works.
No, but you can make that if you want. I would say, why do you feel that way?
Great question. So, Street of Epistemology, you want to break down what those words mean again, just so the listeners?
Epistemology is the study of knowledge.
Hmm.
And meta-epistemology is the study of the study of knowledge. As Peter Boghossian says, there's 200 people that care in the world about meta-epistemology. So we won't even talk about that.
Okay. What does it mean to study knowledge? Like, what does it mean in a layman's sense?
It's people believe they have knowledge, and it's studying that belief in their knowledge, what they believe to be true. That's my understanding of it.
Okay. So it's like, I might have a very strong belief, but you want to know how I reach that strong belief. Does that seem fair?
Correct.
Okay.
And street epistemology doesn't mean it has to be done on the street. It's just it's a term that's used. But we're not evangelical atheists. We're just people that care greatly about the truth. But we are willing to change. That's a big piece of what we're doing, is we don't come into this with preconceived notions. I mean, yes, I may have a belief in the non-existence of anything supernatural, but that doesn't cloud when I'm having a conversation with somebody what their beliefs are and whether they're true or not. They have to make their case as to whether their beliefs are true or not and support those.
Okay, cool. Larry, what do you think?
Well, getting back to what he said about faith, if faith actually led one to truth and a particular religion was the truth, as most of all of them believe that it is, then why do we have so many different religions? Aren't people following their faith to truth? But how do they end up in a different religion from the one you're in, if that's the case? Every religion tells their followers to have faith that what their preachers are telling them are true. Basically, it's saying, have faith, then the stuff that I tell you is true. And it can't be, because everybody tells different stories and different creation events and different people, different prophets. It's nonsensical. I like to hand out a card.
That's very true.
When I meet people and introduce myself as an atheist, I give them a card that says, faith is incredible. With faith, you can believe anything. And it has a picture of a smiley face with a thumbs up. And it gets the point across. But a lot of times, you know, if you give it to a Christian, they don't get it, because that's what they literally believe. That, you know, it is incredible, and you can believe what you need to believe to follow Jesus. Not realizing that you can also take faith in a totally different direction.
I agree. I completely agree.
And I've always thought, getting back to epistemology, I guess I've always thought that street epistemology was the study of how we acquire knowledge.
That sounds also accurate for me, too.
Yeah.
it might mean a lot. I'm under the impression that street epistemology, as the coin term, has very loose definitions for at least how we employ it. But the overall goal is to help someone assess how they've come to a conclusion.
Right. It questions the methods of acquiring.
Right. Questioning the methodology, mm-hmm. and then hopefully getting some insight from how someone does it, whether they actually have a really reliable way or not reliable, we can highlight that.
Right.
I do got this one weird question. I think it's really good. It's probably a really interesting criticism. Again, this is from the Critique Street Epistemology Facebook group, where anyone wants to critique street epistemology or see more videos of critiques on street epistemology, you can check it out. We're an open group. But it says, seems that street epistemology is basically reliabilism and wolf's clothing. And just as the definition of reliabilism, it's a worldview where everything that's reliable is valid and everything that's not reliable is not valid. So the claim is, if reliabilism counts as legitimate grounds for doubting something and something without evidence, then should we disavow all the things that we believe without evidence, such as moral beliefs?
It sounds to me like you're selling absolutism. You know, if you believe this, then you've got to follow the dogma of realityism or you know, whatever. It's what they're used to in their own mindset. They have authoritarianism where the preacher tells them they got to believe this and they can't believe anything else from it. So they make up some other thing that describes us and along the same line when that's just not the case. I mean, what can you do to try to dissuade them of that idea? That's what free thinking is all about.
I'm thinking of...
what?
We're trying to get... So, we have some listeners on the show in the Messenger group who are watching in on this, and one of them is trying to get a question to the show. He's been texting it directly to the radio station. Okay. And I've been telling him, no, that's just that's like a phone receiver landline.
Yeah,
kind of
we
thing.
Have a phone just call.
So we have a guy named Scott Williams. He is listening over onto the show from the Facebook group, or from the Street Epistemology Facebook group. Strictly from the League, the best place for reliable critical feedback on SD content. Go ahead and check it out, Critique and Conquer. We're here to help you guys out. Anyway, he wants to know how you define faith. Shoe peddler, because it seems like a lot of different people have it. And he also says that faith is also defined as trust, like trusting one's wife. What's the difference between his idea of faith and yours?
I apologize. I didn't really pick up on what he said. Say that one more time, if you don't mind.
How do you define faith, and how would it be any different from trust?
Well, I would say I can have faith that I'm going to fall backward and somebody's going to catch me. But unless I know that person really, really well, I can't trust them to actually catch me. Does that make any sense?
So are you equating trust and faith as the same thing?
I think they're similar.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have faith to gain trust.
May I?
Whoa. Yeah, please.
He's doing a false equivocation. He's equivocating the two terms of faith and trust. If you go to the library, if you go to the dictionary and look up faith, you don't get one definition, and that definition is not trust. You get like seven definitions, and one of those definitions is religious faith. Now that is using completely different than trust or regular everyday faith, which is based on day-to-day evidence. Like if I sit down in a chair, I know the chair is going to, I have trust in the chair. I have faith in the chair because I've sat down in this chair 100 times over the course of the 3 or 4 years that I've lived. I mean, that I've bought this chair and it's the same thing with stepping on my brakes in the car. I have trust built over time, and evidence of the efficiency of that device. Now, he's trying to replace trust with a religious faith, which is belief in things unseen. In other words, it's basically another word for hoping for something that he's never experienced before.
Okay, so I know the reference that you're making. You're referencing Romans. I forgot the chapter and verse, but it's basically faith in the things unseen, substance of the things hoped for.
Yeah, he's equivocating,
He's making a reference to Hebrews chapter 1:11. He just sent me the text right now, in that... there are a lot of different definitions of faith in the Bible, unfortunately. And the one that he's alluding to is one that's built on trust, and he's saying that his experience in God is trustworthy. Therefore, is he validated in having his belief in God?
We'd have to talk about those experiences he's had, and if they're just feelings, then feelings aren't facts. We can't depend on feelings being interpreted correctly by the feeler. In other words, if you're in church and you get moved by the Holy Spirit, who was the first person to tell you that your good feelings in church was the Holy Spirit? It was probably the preacher. And that's something that you just carried with you from then on. You interpret that emotion that rises in you when you're in church as the Holy Spirit, because you know that's the way you've always looked at it. You've got a whole level of interpretation there that you need to look at.
Chief Pablo, what do you think?
I think we're down in the weeds, and sadly, people want to go down in the weeds all the time.
And we don't have time really to come out. We've got about 3 minutes left in the show, so we need to. Why don't you, Wombat, talk about your channel, and Shoe Pebbler, can you talk about some way that people can get to your resources?
I'll let Shoe Pebbler go first. Take as much time as you need.
Yep. Locally in Indianapolis, I've started up a meetup group called Reality and Truth. We only have, I think, 34 members right now.
Whoa, that's all good.
It's a start, right? But these are all people that are free thinkers, and some are agnostics, some are atheists, and some may even be partial believers at this point and caught in between. And my goal is to find ways to either have online chats with them, maybe have possible meetups when the time comes. And then I also have a website, gatewaybeliefs.com or .org. And that's something that I'm working on that you're aware of.
And I also would love gatewaybeliefs.org. It's a really nice blog that's starting out on the concepts of someone starting out in street epistemology. It's a great place to follow that guy's journey, Shoe Pebbler's journey, as he learns more and more about the subject. My channel is called Let's Chat. If you search Let's Chat on YouTube, it's the first to the second thing that pops up based on your search history. And where I'm just about to cross 500 subscribers for the first time, I'm getting like a steady 50 or so every month.
Excellent.
And I'm really liking that the channel's growing. I'm also going over to Cincinnati in November to give a talk for American Atheists on the subject, and we'll continue to keep trucking on this really cool, fascinating journey. Larry, what about you?
Well, I'd like to direct people to my website. It's digitalfreethought.com. Click on the blog button for all the goodies. All of our radio shows are there, archived there, if you'd like to look them up by subject and download and listen to them as a podcast. We've got a lot of articles that I have compiled into a book you can get on Amazon called Atheism, What's It All About? And that's about it, I guess. Go to, if you're in Knoxville, check out KnoxvilleAtheists.org and find out about all the other atheist groups and free thinking groups here in Knoxville. And that's about all the time we've got. I want to say I really appreciate Shoe Pebbler coming on and Wombat for bringing him. And thank you both for helping me make a really good show tonight. I think it was great. Everybody,
yeah.
Remember, don't worry about hell. Everybody's going to somebody else's hell. So don't sweat it. The only time to worry about is when they prove that heaven, hell, and souls are real. And so far, they have not. Say goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye, everyone.
Bye, Shoe Pebbler. Bye, Wombat. See you later. Next week, 7 o'clock.
All right. Take care, guys. Thanks.
Listening to Digital Free Thought Radio Hour.
Simply-